Chapter 15. Thematica ran the length of the Engineerium, moving between reactor vent controls through streaming plumes of escaping gases. Hot enough to flens bare flesh, each superheated blast scorched his armour of paint and made the interior feel like a furnace. He sweated through his body glove, the perspiration stinging his eyes and blurring the reams of information flickering past on his visor. Emergency vents were draining power from the reactors as quickly as they could. He paused by a venting station and watched the ivory numerals on the display click and clack as they spun down, like the altimeter of an aircraft in free fall. The newly limbered servo harness on his back worked red iron flow wheels on the pipework higher up, and a data inload spike stabbed into an open terminal port nearby. His bloodstream surged with synesthetic heat from the protesting reactors. "Still far too high," he said. "Tyro's not going to like that. No, not one bit." Voices cried in his ear, demanding updates, but he ignored them. What could he tell them that would matter? The power levels in the ship's reactors were spiralling out of control, and no matter how many null rods he deployed, they were on the verge of going critical. "And once that happens..." He left the sentence hanging. Thematica moved on through the engine spaces, watching dying servitors whose skin bubbled and peeled in the intolerable heat as they worked. Exo-shielded engine seers fought with the venting controls, diverting power into redundant systems and looking for additional ways to bleed off the excess safely. A futile task, but one which might buy the captain some time to fight the enemy borders. That was all Thematica could give him, and it galled him that he had brought them to this. "I should be down in the decks fighting," he said, diverting a portion of his attention to study the tactical feeds from the ship's data engines. The embarkation deck was holding just, though reports on the nature of the enemy made little sense. But it wasn't the fighting there that concerned Thematica. A number of splinter groups had broken into the Sisypheum on the levels above the embarkation deck. Quick reaction forces were even now moving to intercept, but more and more it looked like the initial attack was intended to pin the defenders in place, while some other objective was the true goal of the attack. Thematica shut off the feed. While he was as fearsome and indomitable in battle as any warrior of the 10th Legion, he knew this was where he could do the most good. He disengaged his inload spike and moved back towards the control station at the end of the engine spaces. Shapes moved in the fog of irradiated steam, servitors who would be dead within the hour from atomic poisoning, and Lex mechanics whose higher brain functions would already be degrading in the chemical backwash. Here and there, a few iron hands worked in the guts of opened reactor casings, braving radioactive bleed-off and boiling corrosive gases to keep a lid on the imminent reactor meltdown that would blow the Sisypheum to its component parts. An explosion of such magnitude would destroy everything nearby. Suddenly, Thematica knew how he too could fight the enemy. The Iron Circle locked their shields together in a blunt wedge, like the prow of a Legion starship, and leaned into their charge. Gunfire ricocheted from their energy shields and heavily armoured plates. Driven by fibre bundle muscles and power cores, their frame was thickened around the shoulders, heads and arms to better resist incoming fire, and nothing the Iron Hands could throw at the battle robots slowed their pace one iota. An unstoppable juggernaut of burnished iron, gold and jet, they hammered the Iron Hand's defence like a wrecking ball. A pair of rhinos were smashed aside, sent skidding back 50 meters by coordinated swipes of their shields, and half a dozen Legion warriors were crushed beneath the unstoppable power of their siege hammers. With machine precision, their shields parted, and Perturabo surged from within their aegis, with Forex and Kroger at his side. Forgebreaker swept out and hammered down onto the deck. Seismic shockwaves surged out in a radial pattern, flipping over armoured vehicles and sending debris flying through the air. Iron Hands were swept aside and hurled against the walls like leaves in a hurricane. Mobile gun platforms were smashed into their component parts, and the emplaced weapon turrets went offline with the pressure differential. The Iron Circle locked their shields to the deck and swung up shoulder-mounted weapons, rotary cannons, grenade launchers, and quad carbines. Overlapping fields of fire fanned out from their position, a horizontal sheet of trace and las that burned and blasted anything in its path. "My lord," shouted Forex, dropping to one knee and bringing his combi bolter up. Perturabo saw a rhino that had somehow managed to remain upright. Straight away, he saw its mass was considerably more than a standard pattern APC. Vox antenna told him that this was a commander's tank. A warrior of the 10th Legion sat in the cupola, aiming the slave storm bolters.
"He's mine," said Perturabo. "Finish the rest yourselves."
Forex nodded and waved three of the Iron Circle to his side, pushing round to the flanks where the Emperor's children had fallen upon the reeling Iron Hands. Their slaughters were unseemly, but thorough. None of the 10th Legion warriors would be getting up again, and none would be fit for gene harvesting. Kroger leapt a fallen bulkhead plate, his bolt pistol banging off rounds into the stunned defenders. Another three of the Iron Circle kept pace with the newest Triarch, keeping the worst of the enemy fire at bay and adding the power of their own weapons to his charge. Two of the Iron Circle took position ahead of Perturabo as a blitz of bolter shells blazed from the Rhino Commander's guns. The shields of the Iron Circle intercepted them in a storm of sparks and detonations. The battle robots skidded around and lowered their shields like a ramp before him, and Perturabo used them as a springboard to vault into the air with his hammer raised high. An arcing stream of rounds followed him up, detonating on his armour without effect. Forgebreaker arced down like an unstoppable piston and flattened the front half of the armoured vehicle entirely. The tank flipped up and somersaulted overhead. Perturabo turned to watch the Rhino be slammed down with bone-crushing force by the integrity field. It rolled into a projecting stanchion, buckling what remained of its armour like foil. More gunshots reached out to him, blasts of coldly accurate bolter fire and the spiralling contrail of a missile. An energy shield deflected the missile up into the roof space, and another took the battering impact of the mass-reactive shells. He dropped his hammer to his side and swung his arm around, unleashing a thundering salvo from his gauntlet. Heavy, custom-fabricated rounds, fashioned by a machine of the Ferenzi polymath, punched through Legion plate with plasmic armor-piercing warheads and used their victim's body mass as biothermic fuel. Warriors ignited like human pyres with every detonation, and Perturabo walked his fire through the Iron Hands as they rallied on their sergeants and officers. Each time Perturabo saw a ranked warrior establish control, he slew him with a lethally accurate round that punched through his center mass and set him ablaze. A desperate group of Iron Hands charged from the wreckage of a blazing vehicle, a kill team with melter guns, plasma rifles, and grenade belts. The carapace guns of the Iron Circle cut a handful down, who vanished in the blue fire of premature detonations. Perturabo stilled the violence of the battle robots with a thought and let the enemy come. 15 hard, hungry warriors, elites by the look of them. He saw hate in the light of their helms, theirs and his own reflected. Their armour was beaten and scarred. Their willingness to die was admirable. His hammer took the first three, breaking them apart like porcelain dolls. A burst of gunfire ripped another two in half. Then they were upon him, swords cutting and high-energy pistols flashing with sun-hot brightness. The Iron Hands were a legion of killers, men born into clashing tribes and violence, part of a warrior culture shaped by the ruined world upon which they grew to manhood. They fought well, some even managing to land blows upon Perturabo's armour. A plasma blast scored across his breastplate. He snapped the weapon in two and crumpled the wielder's head with the broken barrel. A shriek of flash-burned air scorched his shoulder plate black, before Forgebreaker turned the warrior to a mist of exploded body parts. His gauntlet spat death, each shot punching through its target like a fiery lance. Wherever he gestured, flames and screams followed. The Iron Hands could not defeat him, could not even fight him, but they never faltered, and did not let the absolute impossibility of the task distract them from its execution. Perturabo admired them for such single-minded devotion, even as he killed them without mercy. The last warrior dropped, his upper half a pulped mess while his lower half twitched at Perturabo's feet. Even without looking up, it was abundantly clear that the battle for the embarkation deck was over. Forex and Kroger hounded the Iron Hands as the sounds of gunfire slackened. The last of the defenders were either dead or had fallen back behind meters-thick blast shutters that would take breaching charges to penetrate. The crew would be manning pre-prepared choke points throughout the ship, bottlenecks and killing grounds where their lack of numbers would not be a disadvantage. The Emperor's children cavorted without honour among the fallen, looting the corpses and making sport of their burned and violated flesh. Valuable time was being wasted, and time was of the essence in any boarding action. The success or failure of such an assault depended on preventing the enemy from regrouping or rallying behind surviving commanders. Keeping the initiative in any fight was key to victory, and never more so than during the desperate struggle to wrest a starship from its crew. Yet Perturabo hesitated to push the attack. He took a moment to study the troops by which this victory had been won. A monstrous host of unnatural forms and nightmarish appearances. A few dozen of the living creatures wandered as though lost, while the corpses of the dead lay strewn around the deck. Perturabo knew them for what they were, the Terata, wrought from the harvested gene seed of Istvan's dead by Fulgrim's flesh alchemist. Perturabo's heart hardened as he saw squad markings and legion tattoos that surgery or cellular manipulation had not obscured. Those of the Iron Hands were in the majority, but there were salamanders and raven guard aplenty too. It sat ill with Perturabo that his brother's legion chose to violate the genetic structure of the space marines, even enemy ones, for once such a technology was unleashed, it would be impossible to contain. What other boundaries might such a man flout if given free rein with the Emperor's genetic knowledge? Nor had these disgusting abominations been drawn only from the legion still loyal to the Emperor. Here and there, Perturabo saw markings belonging to the legions of Angron, Mortarion, Alpharius, Lorgar, and even one of the sons of Horus. He had known Fabius had plundered the dead of their enemies, but to know that no treachery was beyond him was a sobering thought. If Fulgrim cared so little for the warriors of his brothers in rebellion, to what deeper betrayals might he yet sink? Escorted by a capering, gibbering honour guard of drooling Terata and Marius Verosian's cacophony, Fabius made his way through the corridors of the Sisypheum with single-minded haste. A maintenance postern left unsealed for a moment too long had granted them access to the guts of the ship, and the mutant strength of his Terata had broken them into its working heart. The four creatures with him were the very best of his work, ones whose genetic structure had required the smallest amount of surgical modification. Superficially, they still resembled space marines, albeit hideously bloated and overgrown, with whatever loose plates of armour he had been able to scavenge strapped to their bodies. Yes, these were his greatest creations, but even these, Terata, were consuming themselves. Biological furnaces raged within them, voraciously devouring nutrient matter to sustain the physiological changes wrought upon their flesh. The chemical gruel they were fed should have been enough to keep them from immolating under the demands of their flesh, but too many had collapsed and died under the stresses of combat, enough to convince Fabius that something was very wrong with his underlying gene coding. Was it possible the data Alpharius had stolen from the Raven Guard had been flawed? Unlikely, for none among the Alpha Legion had the necessary expertise to insert such a corrupting agent without his being able to detect it. No, the flaw was one of his own making, and the thrill of rooting it out was as potent as the frustration of its occurrence. The sounds of battle echoed strangely through the corridors. They grew and receded as the defenders fought tooth and nail to hold on to their ship, not knowing it was already lost.
"Where are we going?"
demanded Verosian, his voice mangled by his raw screeching and distended jaws. The former captain of the Third Company was one of Fabius's more successful surgeries, the bone structure of his skull augmented and reshaped to better allow his selected mutations to function. His unexpected pairing with the experimental instruments designed by Bekwa Kinska had proved to be wholly beneficial.
"The Apothecarian," said Fabius.
"Why?"
gurgled Verosian.
"Because there is something there I desire."
"What?"
"I don't know," said Fabius, irritated at being questioned.
"You don't know,"
growled Verosian, and his axe-like weapon matched his ire. Verosian was still considered to be a captain of the Legion and commanded respect. The way the Legion was fracturing, that wouldn't last much longer, but while it did, even Fabius was bound by the chains of command.
"There is a power source there, an ancient machine whose function resonates in frequencies I have never encountered. I do not know what it is, so I want it. You will help me get it."
Verosian grunted something unintelligible in reply, and the three cacophony at his back loosed a grating bark of squalling noise. The low static burr of their weapons set Fabius's teeth on edge, and their constant howling was only contained by the razor gags they wore. Those could be disengaged with a command from Verosian, and the screaming killers would shred the faces of anything in their path with their sonic thunder. Fabius put the cacophony from his mind as they penetrated deeper into the enemy ship via a circuitous route. They had not reached this far without cost, but the fury of his Terrata and the shockwave power of Verosian's warriors had swept aside the pockets of resistance they had encountered along the way. The bare ironwork of the Iron Hand's ship was drab and gloomy, quite without the splendour of the Andronicus. Though Fabius eschewed the gaudy theatrical vigour of his brother warriors, his labyrinthine domain was drenched in sensation of an altogether different kind. It was hard to remember a time when the fleets of the 28th Expedition had looked like this. A lifetime or more ago, thought Fabius. One of the Terrata looked down at him, its mashed and spread features like that of a bloated gigantism sufferer. Its eyes were red with hemorrhaging and bulging with chemical reactions. Saliva drooled from between its swollen jaws, and its breath was hot and animal.
"What, Fanny?" it asked.
"Nothing," said Fabius. "Don't speak to me again."
"They speak," said Verosian. "I hadn't thought any of them retain the intellect."
"Some do," said Fabius, unwilling to admit that the loss of intellect was one of many problems to be rectified in the next batch.
Verosian said,
"You're a long way from the next level of post-human evolution, Apothecary. These are a backward step to humanity's primate history."
"I can't produce the next great leap forwards in evolution without cost," said Fabius, his finger tightening on the haft of his Medicaid needle gun. "Every living thing is linked and part of a great chain that stretches back and forwards in time. Millennia from now, there will be life forms that look at us with a kind of horror that we were so unevolved."
"Speak for yourself, Apothecary,"
grunted Verosian. Fabius wanted to kill Verosian, success or not, but before he could act on that sudden impulse, the Terrata's heavy head snapped up and its enlarged nostrils twitched as it sifted a cocktail of scents.
Fabius caught them a second later. Lapping powder, gun oil and expended munitions, and the cold, caustic stink of an apothecarian. A rabble of iron hands appeared at the end of the corridor, weapons drawn. Fabius wasn't worried. He'd known they wouldn't make it all the way without running into some opposition. "Kill them," he said, and the Territor sprang to obey him.
"Thematica!" shouted Cadmus Tyro. "For Medusa's sake, answer me!"
He threw down the voxhorn and made fists on the edge of the command lectern. The few systems available to him all told the same dispiriting story of defeat and failure. The embarkation deck was lost, and the enemy would be through the blast doors in a matter of minutes. And once that happened, the ship was lost. Tyro refused to accept that.
"Wayland," he said, "tell me you have some power."
"A little," said Sabek Wayland, moving between the various bridge stations as reports flooded into each of them. "I've diverted most of that to the weapons." Tyro nodded. He'd felt the vibrations through the Sisyphean superstructure.
"We're hurting them?"
"Some, but not enough."
"So why are they not firing on us?"
"I don't know for sure, Cadmus," said Wayland. "Maybe because there is a Primarch aboard. Whatever the reason, be thankful for that small mercy." Tyro knew he should be thankful that the Andronicus wasn't shooting at them, but it felt like an insult that they were being boarded, a spiteful knife in the guts that smacked of arrogance and a disregard for the abilities of those aboard.
"Any word from Cybus?"
"No," said Wayland, "not since Perturabo teleported onto the embarkation deck." Tyro felt his flesh crawl at the idea of being boarded by so terrible a foe. In any war scenario, having one of the Emperor's demigod sons take to the field immediately shortened the odds, and he was finding how bitter it tasted to be on the opposite side.
"Then he's dead," said Tyro.
"Is the ship lost?" asked Verucci Vora. "Will the enemy take us alive?"
Tyro looked into Vora's face. Though his words were spoken calmly, Tyro saw naked terror lurking behind the guide's eyes. He feared being taken by the enemy, which was entirely reasonable, but he saw something else, a fear that had nothing to do with whatever fate the Emperor's children or Iron Warriors might have in store for him. Garuda flapped down from the rafters and landed on the engine control station. The bird let out a warbling caw and danced its claws over the metal edging. A chatter of binary jabbed at the base of his neck like an insistent tapping, and he bent over the console to see what had attracted the bird's notice. A cascade of information scrolled across the slate, the specific substance of which was beyond Tyro's expertise. He understood the gist of it, however, and his anger at Thematica's dabbling soared to new heights.
"Wayland," he called, "is Thematica up to what I think he's up to?"
The Iron Father scanned the data, his cognitive augmetics parsing the data into manageable chunks of digestible information. From the look on his face, it was clear that Thematica was doing exactly what Tyro thought he was doing. "He's not venting the excess energy anymore," said Wayland. "He's drawing it all into the engine core. They'll go critical in under 4 minutes."
"Can you stop him?"
"Not from here, Captain," said Wayland.
"Then get down there," ordered Tyro. "Get down there and stop him."
He saw the hesitation in Wayland's eyes and said,
"Did you hear me?"
"I heard you, Captain," said Wayland.
"Then why aren't you en route to the Engineerium?"
"Because I think this might be the only option left to us."
"Destroying the ship?" snapped Tyro. "Never! While we still have breath and bolters, we'll fight these bastards to the end. Ulrak Brantham entrusted the command of his ship to me, and the Land of Shadows will be noonday bright before I let Thematica blow it up."
Wayland rushed over to the captain's station.
"I know, Captain," said Wayland, "but think about it. An enemy Primarch is aboard, and nothing short of another Primarch is going to be enough to drive him off. If Thematica is doing what we think he's doing, then we can kill Perturabo. Right here and now. It won't matter how tough a Primarch is. He won't survive this. We can avenge Ferus Manus."
The armoured door of the apothecarian blew in with a dull clang. Escaping gases vented explosively through the torn hatch, followed closely by a shrieking blast of noise. Glass shattered and medicinal fluids spilled out, a stink of chemicals mixed with counterseptic. Clashing sound waves zipped through the chamber like miniature comets, crazing steel and shattering anything crystalline. Cracks spread over the surface of Ulrich Branthon's casket as Ignatius Newman and Septus Thoic returned fire, filling the empty space with shots. The sound was deafening in the enclosed space. Booming echoes and spiralling contrails pierced the gunsmoke. Atesh Tarsa knelt beside Ulrich Branthon's casket and sighted down the length of his sniper rifle. The scope was slave to his Narthesium gauntlet and projected a wireframe rendition of his target onto his visor, with their internal organs highlighted in red. It made for kill shots every time, but ensured his battles were fought in a neon chrome shimmer of biothermal imagery. Right now, the blown hatch was lousy with flaring heat, bolter trails, and scattered impossible readings. A roaring form ploughed through the haze, a thunderous giant bleeding heat and biometrics that defied easy understanding. Enormous and powerful, its organs were like miniature suns within its frame, spreading energizing light all through a body of monstrous proportions. Tarsa snap-fired, and the thing's organs immediately went supernova as his custom-designed bio-ammo sent it into toxic shock. Distilled from the venom of the Sulveik lizards of the Wakula ash swamps, Tarsa's concoction was lethal to even the most robust cardiovascular system. The creature kept coming. Another round into its chest slowed it, but didn't stop it. Two headshots from Ignatius Newman finally put it on its back, but by then more were pressing through the hatch.
"Rally to the captain!" shouted Newman, moving position as a third impossible beast pushed into the apothecarian.
Septus Thoic rolled from behind cover and fired a short burst into the chest of the lumbering creature. It turned and backhanded him across the chamber.
"This is Tarsa," he yelled into the vox. "We need help in the apothecarian, now!"
He disengaged the Narthesium link and his vision snapped back into focus. Immediately he saw the beast was a space marine, one mutated far beyond its base genome. Tarsa was an apothecary, one of the Legion's guardians of its genetic heritage, and to see such a gross insult to the great work of the Emperor was an affront like no other. Even the War Master's betrayal shrank in comparison to this treachery. Horus's rebellion was an insult to an ideal and had its roots in mortal disaffection, however hard that was to comprehend, but this was an insult to life itself. He fired at the beast Thoic had injured. The shot punched into its skull like a trepanning auger, and the toxin devoured its brain in seconds. It dropped with its club-like paws clutched to its head as its higher functions were necrotized. Yet another monstrous space marine pushed into the apothecarian, and Newman put a burst of fire into its chest before it was upon him. Tarsa went to swing his rifle round, but stopped as he saw three warriors in garishly decorated battle plate appear in the wrecked doorway. His senses recoiled from the shrieking noise surrounding them, a din of clashing disharmony and a riot of screams issuing from shoulder-mounted augmenters. He recognized the Emperor's children from their hideous appearance on Istvan V and wasted no time in putting a round through the throat of the first warrior as he unlimbered a long wire-coiled stave connected to an amplification device on his back. The warrior dropped to his knees, a gurgling howl of pleasure torn from his opened throat as the stave flared with a burst of blue fire and a booming bass note that hurled Tarsa against Branthon's stasis casket. He crashed down on the other side, rolling to his feet and moving away from the fallen captain. The gurgling warrior slumped forwards as another turned a low-slung weapon around, its neck slender and flanged with whipping steel strings and a vicious barb at its end. The legionary pounded the flared base of the weapon before Tarsa could wonder at its exact function, and the air between them buckled with pure concussive force. Once again, Tarsa was hurled back, and his armour cracked open under the sonic pressure. He fell to the tiled floor, his visor a static blur of overloaded systems, his rifle shattered into fragments by the blast. Bolter fire and a roar of hatred sounded among the bellowing screams and shrieks of the Emperor's children's bizarre weaponry. A head bounced from the walls and rolled towards him, a pink helmet with all manner of auditory pickups worked into the metal. Blood drooled from the ragged edges of the neck, and Tarsa pushed himself to his feet in time to see Ignatius Newman bury his chainsword in the guts of another legionary. The Morlock's breastplate was cratered in the centre as though from a tremendous impact, and his battle helm was missing. Septus Thoic wrestled with one of the gene-spliced space marines, but his strength was no match for the boosted physique of the monster. Tarsa climbed onto the end of Branthan's casket and leapt onto its back, driving the functional end of his reductor into the back of its skull. Drills, blades, and organ scoops normally used to remove progenoid glands chewed a fist-sized chunk from its head. Gurgling brain matter and blood filled the tissue compartments of Tarsa's gauntlet, and the creature let out an anguished howl before its nervous system finally processed that it was dead. Tarsa dropped from its back as it fell, and, too late, felt a presence dart in close to him. Something long, sharp, and slender punched into his flesh through the cracks in his armour, and he let out a cry of agony as a poisonous chemical sent shrieking bolts of pain along every receptor in his body. He fell like a broken automaton, his limbs jerking and his internal organs pulsing as their functions went into overdrive. Tarsa's vision blurred with induced pain, but he saw Septus Thoic, brought down by a series of clubbing blows from the last of the mutated space marines. The creature stamped down on Thoic's form, but Tarsa couldn't see whether the Morlock was still alive. Another blast of concussive sonics filled the apothecarian, and Ignatius Newman collapsed, clutching his skull as though it were about to burst. Tarsa tried to crawl towards Ulrich Branthan's casket, but his nerves were jangling as if an ogryn were hammering the synapses of his brain. Nothing was his to control anymore, and he wanted to scream in anger, but even that catharsis was denied him. A figure loomed over him and turned him onto his back, propping him up against the edge of the stasis casket. Tall and swathed in a long robe of grotesquely fleshy texture, the figure's long white hair, sunken cheeks, and parchment yellow skin marked him as a practitioner of the deathly arts, one who in ages past would have been called a necromancer. And yet he still bore the sigils of the apothecary on his pauldrons, a faded prime helix still visible beneath fresh daubs of mindless vandalism. A squatting machine-like presence clung to the apothecary's back, a loathsome mechanized parasite with blackened limbs of blades and hypos. Its waving parts appeared to be studying him. Tarsa wanted to spit in the traitor's face, but even as he felt a measure of control in his facial muscles, he knew he would never regain mastery of his body in time to thwart this apothecary's plans. His head lolled to one side, and he saw Ignatius Newman spasming uncontrollably, his weapons fallen to the floor as he sought to stem the tide of blood streaming from his ears. Two Emperor's children stood splay-legged before him, cradling their howling, squalling instrument weapons in their spiked gauntlets. One stood a head taller than the other, his armour bedecked in obscene sigils, hooks, and vibrational pickups. His face was a viciously stretched and swollen nightmare of mutant bone growth and bionic implantation, making it look as though he were permanently screaming. Tarsa fought for some defiance, but whatever toxin or nerve agent had been used against him was too potent to overcome. The apothecary saw the hate in his eyes and grinned, exposing yellowed teeth and exhaling a corpse's death rattle.
"Don't die yet, little salamander," said Apothecary Fabius. "I might yet have need of you."